Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 19th of March, Anno Domini 2011, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to lose, nothing to choose, and Dave's got something to
say.
Well,
I should say, just before we get into the program, we got to take the time first, jump right in there, and thank all the folks that came last week.
To the terrific pancake breakfast.
Wow.
It was so fun.
That was great with the polka guys before us and that. I mean, the crowd was phenomenal.
Over 1,000 pancakes served.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. We had a great time. For those of you who missed it, we had pancakes and sausages and coffees and juice and great fun. We saw some of our loyal listeners and the
people that helped volunteer. I mean, the other volunteers. I mean,
terrific.
They were great. It was a great team effort. Went very smooth. So
yeah,
again,
yeah,
thank you
really
for
did.
Just jump in there and again.
No, that's
that was fun.
Exactly
that was just
right.
So much fun. I was having
was
more
too
way too much fun in the kitchen.
Yeah, you were. Why am I not getting any sort of signal here?
I don't know.
Do we think?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, you're still putzing with that. One other thing I got to complain about.
Oh, here we go.
Getting old.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, but no. I made the mistake of having some coffee last night.
Oh.
Man, talk about a buzz high.
Yeah, I bet.
It's a bitch.
I used to never be bothered by caffeine. Just absolutely never bothered by it. Now... yeah, not so much.
Yeah, it just
that's a longer story. I won't tell it now.
But it's just amazing. And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Nope, definitely got to stay off of that stuff permanently.
Yeah, you're not kidding.
Well,
I'm with you.
But the thing that it was is, I was in the mood. Sam had made this whole pot. So, you know, I said, I don't want to throw it out because, it comes from the Flower City
Coffee
Company.
Exactly right.
You know, and I love that coffee.
You're around at the public market.
Yep. Too bad she doesn't have a website, but we won't go there.
She's not listening. She's
oh, okay, then we can talk about it. There is no, but some great coffee there. And like I say, so I heated up some, and I love toast with honey on it.
Sure.
So I did that something up, and man, I was wired for the rest of the night. And then you try to go to sleep, and you can't get your mind to shut down.
Yeah,
it's going 16 million ways from Sunday.
I know that story.
I was sitting there practicing the fretboard in my head.
Yeah, there you go. I'll actually tell this story.
All right, go ahead.
At one time before we were married, I had gone out to have supper with my wife and her family. And about halfway through supper, and then I drove her and her sister back into the city. And halfway home, the entire left side of my body went numb. And I thought, oh, here we go. So, of course, like an idiot, I drove myself to the hospital. They gave me an EEG. They gave me an EKG. It's all good. Finally, the doctor says, you may have a caffeine intolerance. I said, I don't think so.
Huh?
She said, how much caffeine did you have today? Well, let's see. It's started at breakfast. I had, I think, 3 pots. She said,
three?
You mean cups? I said, no, pots. Then I went out to breakfast with a friend of mine, had a couple of more pots, had 3 or 4 Cokes during the day.
Actually, 12-cup pots?
Yeah. Had
dude,
you're
serious?
Had a bunch. Oh yeah, had a bunch of. Had a bunch of Cokes during the day, and then at my in-laws before I came home, I had maybe two and a half pots.
So it
was a light day
wait a
for
minute.
Me.
It wasn't intolerance; it was withdrawal.
Wait a minute. How old were you then?
I was 28, 29.
Oh, okay.
So man, and while I'm saying this, her eyes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. She says,
"Yeah,
I think it's your body is rebelling against all that caffeine." I said, "It can't. Caffeine doesn't bother me. I will because I could." Drink that much coffee all day long, including 2.5 pots before I went home, and sleep like a baby all night long. But apparently, no, not anymore. So she said, don't drink any coffee, and I will tell you the withdrawal was a you-know-what.
Yeah, well.
But as it turns out now, if I drink too much caffeinated coffee,
mm-hmm.
I can start to feel the tingling happening on the left side, and if I have too much,
I'll have my regular cup in the morning, and then I'll switch. If I'm going to have anything, I'll have the decaf. And then the afternoons, I'm switching to water, and evenings, most of the time, and I've been doing this for over a year, you know, I just have sit there and have iced tea or lemonade or that type of stuff. Once in a while, I do coffee, and I'm finding out it's less and less I can tolerate it.
Yeah, and I can't tolerate it in the evenings anymore. Don't get old. It's
well, I can if I want to stay up all night.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then you're just nasty.
Looking at the back of my eyeballs.
Well, nastier.
Nastier.
I don't drink coffee, and neither do my brother or sister. So my mom, when we were kids, was always, you know, whoever you bring home to meet has to drink coffee.
Yeah. Well, when I was growing up,
my dad drank Postum.
Wow.
Why? Because
I was watching Top Gear the other day, and they're talking about Bovril, and I guess Bovril is the English equivalent to Postum instead of drinking coffee.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I grew up in the Italian neighborhood over in Jones Avenue, and that, and I'd go over pick up my friend Tony to go to school. Tony would sit there, and his mother would just have a bowl of Cheerios. She'd fix up a cup of coffee and pour the coffee over the Cheerios.
Sure.
And that's how he ate his cereal, with coffee.
Sure.
Ooh.
No, nothing wrong with that.
Okay.
And then the espresso. Make the espresso right, you have 4 or 5 cups of that, you're set for a couple hours.
Those little tiny cups, too.
Yeah.
Well, for you, maybe.
We used to drink three pots, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Holy.
That was just for breakfast.
Dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to drink it all the time.
Man.
I drank more coffee than any two people.
So I
never drank coffee till I was like 21.
Is that why you own a coffee store now? So you can get coffee at wholesale prices?
Well, he just sits there and inhales the beans.
Yeah. Certainly when it got to the point where I had to be very careful how much coffee I drank, I started to pay attention to what kind of coffee I drank. No more of the like instant spoon it in, just grab it out of the machine, whatever, whatever. If I'm not going to drink that much of it anymore, if I can't do quantity, I want quality.
Well, then I got to admit, I do like the smell of the bags when you give me the empty bags and that, you know, throw them in the car.
That's the best thing to do.
Back at Christmas time, I bought a couple of bags for my wife, but I had to leave them in the car because I didn't want her smelling them. In my car, every time I opened the car, it smelled so nice, and I had to make sure she didn't ride in my car with me.
Yeah, I do the same thing, take an empty bag of, excuse me, of whatever the flavor, you know, you can't, with regular coffee, it doesn't last so much. With the flavored coffee,
the hazelnut.
Lasts for days. Yes. Yep. All right, let's get on to the news. Considering how much information we entrust to the internet every day, it's hard to believe there is no general law to protect people's privacy online. Companies harvest data about people as they surf the net, assemble it into detailed profiles, and sell it to advertisers or others without ever asking permission. So it is good to see a groundswell of support emerging for minimum standards of privacy online and off. This week, the Obama administration called for legislation to protect consumers' privacy. In the Senate, John Kerry is trying to draft a privacy bill of rights with the across-the-aisle support of John McCain. Microsoft, which runs one of the biggest internet advertising networks, said it supports a broad-based privacy law. It has just introduced a version of its Explorer browser that allowed surfers to block some tools advertisers use to track consumers' activities online. It is crucial that lawmakers get this right. There is strong pressure from the advertising industry to water down rules aimed at limiting the data companies can collect and what they can do with it. Most oppose a sensible proposal by the Federal Trade Commission for a do-not-track option, likely embedded in web browsers. They have proposed self-regulation instead, but the zeal to self-regulate tends to wane when it is not backed by government rules and enforcement. Senator Kerry has not yet proposed specific legislation, but he has laid out sound principles. Companies that track people's activities online must obtain people's consent first. They must specify what data they are collecting and how they will use it. They need consumers go ahead to use those data for any new purpose. They are responsible for the data's integrity, and consumers should have the right to sever their relationship with data collectors and ask for their file to be deleted. But there are potential areas of concern. Senators Kerry and McCain so far have not called for a do-not-track option. They would allow companies to write their own privacy policies and submit them to the FCC for approval. Advertising firms still argue that privacy protections could undermine the free internet, depriving it of ad revenue by reducing advertisers' ability to target customers. This is, I think, a little overstated. Advertisers will still need to advertise. If many people opt out of behavioral targeting, the firms will find other ways to do it. Privacy protections, I believe, are long overdue. We can only hope the swell of support will lead to significant legislation. So our question to you this week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is online privacy protection. And your choices are, I'm for it, I'm against it, and I like pie. And so far, not surprisingly, 72% of you are for it. 28% of you like pie, and nobody is against it.
And we just had Pie Day.
We just had Pie Day.
My wife made a chicken pot pie for
very nice
from scratch for Pie Day.
Very nice. So when you're done with the poll, you'll have more to say. I know you will. So check the yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
The question there is, how do you protect your privacy online? So far, not too many people are talking about that, but there are some things in the forum. So do that. And then, of course, that's our question to you. How do you protect your privacy online? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
See, that's one of the problems that's been brewing is that all of the different browsers, Chrome and Firefox and IE, are working on their own do not track headers for trying to put in privacy. It's nice that they're doing it, but it's annoying that they're all using different ones.
Right, and it would be nice if they could standardize that.
Yeah.
All right, we have Bill on the line, patiently waiting from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Good afternoon, you guys. I was wondering, could you guys tell me how I can download and burn YouTube videos to DVD?
By default, it's something that isn't allowed.
Right.
Okay.
But there are a couple of ways to do it. I use a website called KeepVid, KeepVid.com.
Okay.
And what that does is it converts the YouTube stream into a downloadable file, either a Flash video file or an MP4 file, which you can then burn to a DVD, either a data DV or you can create a video DVD with authoring tools.
Oh, awesome.
So, KeepVid is one of them. There's also another one called KeepIt. There's a couple of different programs that you can get that will read the YouTube stream in order to allow you to save it. The problem is it's a Flash video in most cases, and Flash isn't designed for saving. It's only designed for streaming.
Okay.
Right, but if you just Google download YouTube, you'll find a whole bunch of places that let you do that.
Okay.
You'll be more or less happy with the results. Believe me when I tell you, not all of them are good. There are also, did you mention that there are some browser plugins?
Yeah, there's a plugin for Firefox. I think a plugin for Safari that will find that Flash stream and save it as
and
a file.
And one for Chrome as well.
Okay, great, because we have Firefox.
There you go.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Like I said, you may not be entirely happy with the quality that results from that. They're really designed to be streamed and played fairly small online. Usually when you download them for yourself, they get larger and they get
lower quality, yeah.
Larger, and so they look pixelated. So
what has been happening lately on YouTube is that they are allowing higher definition files. You can now upload up to a 2 gigabyte file as a regular YouTube user. So you can have the 480 quality, 720 quality, 1080 quality to have even higher quality. I know the guys from Pixel Core are doing 4K video.
Wow!
So there aren't any computer screens that can view a 4K video, but
right.
they're doing them just to see what it looks like.
Well, and eventually that's going to become more the norm. You may not be able to view the quality like you'd want to view the quality, but the reality is that when you get down to the future, who knows how big our screens will be, how fast our video cards
right.
will be.
And our download service. And
our download service will probably still be as crappy as it is today. We don't seem to want to move off of that. I don't know why. I get it. Whatever it is, I don't get it. But
well, it's the ISPs are rebelling. They don't want to spend the money to put in faster service. They want to add bandwidth caps to make you pay more for downloading more.
Right.
And now the big push is in mobile and cellular rather than landlines. And there was the FCC net neutrality. Regulation that was proposed would exempt wireless carriers from it, and so now there's another congressman has reintroduced net neutrality, including wireless providers, so they can't put bandwidth caps, or they can't shape your internet to prevent you from downloading too much in their aspects.
If they've given us devices like the iPhone and the Android phones that give us that kind of freedom, that give us that kind of power, and then they turn around and limit it just in the name of money? I'm sorry, that's just kind of low class to me. But I guess that's just...
Yeah, but that's the way it's going, and unfortunately, so much stuff now is coming over it.
Yeah, well, and that's just it. I mean, more people spend their time playing with their phones than they do on their computers, and as much as I'd like to move to a newer phone, I don't know that I want to move to another data plan. If I get a 4G phone, I think I have to move to a 4G data plan.
And most of the cell companies are raising their rates for the 4G service because it's faster. And they do make sort of a valid point. You're getting more, so shouldn't you pay more for it? And they call it consumption-based billing. It's like your water bill. You pay more if you use more water.
Got a computer question?
No, we don't.
No, but thanks anyway.
Wrong button.
We have the answers. Hey, we could turn this into Jeopardy.
We could. We'll ask the questions. You give us the answer. No, we'll give you the answer. You ask the question.
In that
All
order.
Right. We're going to This is so weird. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ramey, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we're going to get, who's next? Ron? Ron from Greece on the line. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
It's more of a comment. I was at Sam's today, a sponsor of yours, and they're doing a computer recycling there for free. I thought people would like to know about it.
Nice. Which one?
The one in Greece.
Very nice. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that computers, electronics, phones, things like that are filled with toxic chemicals and hazardous waste, and you can't just throw them in the garbage. So a lot of recycling companies will charge you to drop them off. So it's nice that quite often around town, places will do a free recycling day, and you can environmentally consciously recycle your equipment.
Right. So if you've got a bunch of stuff laying around that you've been meaning to get rid of, now's the time to do it safely and with a certain amount of environmental consciousness. Thanks, Ron.
Sure.
Very, very nice. That is really something that that we need to be more aware of. You can't just, you've got your phone or your old doodah, any electronic device.
Last week's phone.
Last week's phone.
Because you bought this week's phone.
Right. Last week's handheld game that died.
Yep.
Those are all filled with that stuff. It's not just computers, any electronic device. So your anything, I suppose, more than a clock radio. Probably even clock radios have a little nowadays.
So it's the usual joke because you set it in front of the house and it will be gone in an hour.
You're right.
But you never know what they do with it. So if you want to recycle responsibly.
Right. Exactly. Oh, all right. Our next caller is Ted from Spencerport. Welcome, Ted. Thanks for your patience.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have a problem with Mozilla Thunderbird, and let me explain. I bought a new computer and transferred the default from my old computer to this new one, and so that I would have all my email addresses. And that worked out fine, but the problem is when I add a new contact and then get out of it, get out of Thunderbird, and then come back into it, it's gone. So apparently there's something that's preventing me or locking me out from or telling the computer not to remember my addition. I wonder if you had any comments on that.
Well, there's a couple of things. First, you really see all of your old addresses.
Yes.
In the contacts, and I think Thunderbird gives you multiple contact things, people that you add, people that you just get from
emails
and like that. Are you sure you're looking in the right, essentially the right address book?
Well, I'm looking in personal address book.
And that's where you added people.
If I click on new contact and put that contact in, mm-hmm. type it in, and then get out of it, close down, and then go back to Thunderbird and open it up again, it's gone. Now, I experimented with also looking at Thunderbird. I have a choice of personal address or Outlook Express Book or collected addresses. If I go to Outlook Express Book, I can put stuff in there, and it will remember it. But the personal address book will not.
What operating system did you have on the old computer?
XP, and I've got Microsoft 7 now.
7. See, it sounds like a permission problem.
That's what I was thinking.
He doesn't have permission to write to that file.
Your Windows 7?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, I wonder if on there he gave it that when you make a, you know, on that program,
well, migrated,
you right-click on it and you can say run it as administrator?
Well, not really that. What I'm thinking is the actual address book file itself. What is it, .ab, something like that?
It's the name of the file. What you want to do is you want to do a search. Search for the file named abook.mab.
Well, I already have that. And
you wanna,
I have the new file, which is under a bunch of stuff, slash profiles, dash, in this case it's 2T4TG17T.
Yeah, whatever.
Default.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I transferred the default file from the old computer to this new one.
Great, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What I'm talking about is once you have that file, you may need to change the permissions on it. So if you...
Right-click on it.
Go ahead.
You right-click on it, and you go to Properties. And in Properties, it'll say whether it's read-only, which in copying it sometimes can be.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds like it's read-only, and it's not allowed you to
double-check the
files.
Permissions there. And then the other thing what I was going to say is also if you right-click on the actual Thunderbird program, with Windows 7, you can sit there and say run this program as though I am administrator. On some of them.
That's very dangerous, though, because then if you get...
Yeah, but if he's getting blocked because it doesn't think he has appropriate...
It's better to fix the permissions than to...
Oh, yeah, but what I'm saying is first do that, but if not, then he might have to go in there to change it temporarily to...
No, I do understand that, but you got to be very, very careful of that, Ted. I can't stress how highly, because if you get a virus while you are running as administrator, then the virus runs as administrator.
Yeah. One thing you can also try doing, if none of that works, is export all of your addresses, make a new address book, and then import all the old ones, and then see if you can add new ones as well.
That's a good point.
But first, the first thing to do is to check the permissions on the abook.mab file. It may, in fact, be set to read-only.
I'll try that. Right-click on that file.
Yep.
And, right. There's a couple of different things you can do. One is you can just try changing it to read and write. The other thing you can do is there's a checkbox for take ownership of this file.
Because it still may be owned by the previous user on the previous computer.
Right. If all you did was move it over, it may not have changed the ownership or permissions.
Okay. I will check that out.
Thank you.
All righty.
Thank you very much.
Let's know.
Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
And I've posted a link in the link list on how to change permissions on Windows 7.
All right. We did have somebody text us with a question, and it's, Casey from Rochester. And he says he's using the latest version of Cobain Backup. He's tried, setting it up to do a differential backup, but it seems to be just grabbing everything. He's tried using the Revo to uninstall, reinstall. Didn't help. It takes 5 hours to run because all the files I back up. any ideas. He definitely doesn't have it doing incremental because incremental will only grab the files that it sees that the date has changed.
Did he say incremental or did he say differential?
Incremental.
No, it sounds like he's doing differential.
Oh, wait, no, I take that back. Yes, it is differential.
Right, so he is doing a differential backup, so it's working as he's told it to work.
Right, well done there.
I was thinking
it sounds like you want to do an incremental backup.
That's what he wants to do.
Cobian is doing exactly what you're telling it to do, Casey. There's three types of backup. There's a full backup, which takes everything from your hard drive and moves it to the backup. You want to do one of those every, say, week.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the in-between, you want to do an incremental backup, not a differential backup. A differential backup takes everything since the last full backup.
That's changed.
Right.
Not everything
every
since,
single time.
Not everything since the last backup. The last everything since
full
the last
backup.
Full backup.
Yeah, right. So let's say you do a full backup on Sunday. Then you do an incremental backup on Monday. It takes everything from Monday. Do another incremental backup. It takes everything from Monday and Tuesday. Do another incremental, differential backup, and it takes everything from Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. See, so you really that's probably what's happening to you right now.
But the thing of it is, though, is it still even a differential should be less than a full backup.
True, but it's everything since the last differential.
Right. Oh, yeah. No,
so
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, and one
we
thing.
All, that, we all do this. It's very confusing.
Yes. One thing that adds to the confusion can be if you're using a program like Microsoft Outlook, which keeps all of your email in one giant file. So anytime you open your email program, that one giant file changes. So say on Monday, say you got a 4-gig Outlook file. On Monday, you get mail, it backs up 4 gigs. On Tuesday, you get mail. It backs up the 4 gigs from Tuesday and the 4 gigs from Monday.
Right.
So it backs up more and more and more every time.
Right. So, and there's no way to change that if you're going to use programs like Outlook Express because that's the way they save their files and nothing is going to change that. I find that all the time. I use a program called rsync. Because I'm on a Linux box, and rsync only takes the pieces that have changed and moves them to the backup.
Yeah, Thunderbird
so
and Apple Mail keep each message as a separate file, so this doesn't happen.
Right. So many programs we call it touching it when they change it just slightly, touch so many programs that even rsync backs up a lot of files every night.
So the short answer to his question is change it to be an incremental backup, and it will do what he wants.
Yep.
Right. Incremental is what you're looking for. Even so, if you're using programs like Outlook or Outlook Express, then you're still going to have a problem because it's still going to back up all of your data because it's all in one file.
That's an issue on the Macintosh if you're using Microsoft Entourage, which also keeps one giant database file, and you're backing up to a network backup. It's even slower because now you've got to back up that giant file over your network.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully right.
it makes a great deal of sense for certain efficiencies to keep all of the data in one file.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of backup, it's very bad.
Yep.
Yeah. All righty. I hope that answered your question, Casey.
Yeah. Hopefully it will. He hasn't responded back, so I told him we'd be answering on the air, so.
Yep. Let me read.
Tell the people about that service you just used.
Oh, go ahead, tell them.
Text.
The texting. We can,
You folks, you can turn around and you can certainly email us all. You can call in here to the show, but we now have another service where you can text us, 585-209-9010, just like KC just did. Evidently, he's out and had a particular question. If you're out sitting in your car and don't want to be hung up on the phone, you can go ahead and text us, and we can write it right back to you and let you know. I mean, we use it throughout the week, whether it's calling in here to Soundbites or if you want to, like on my show that I do Thursday nights from 6 to 9, I have folks text me on there to request a song or want to know what song did I just play a little bit ago, and I can write them right back, And if you're not sitting right there at a computer or want to be on the phone because you don't have hands-free, quick pulled over text, we'll type it right back. So it's just another vehicle that the fabulous Rob has made available for our great listeners.
The fabulous Rob. All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
I have a comment and a question.
Ah.
Okay, the comment is, ever since Dave had his heart problem several years ago, I've always kept four baby aspirin at the computer, and I keep them in my work and in my car, and I would encourage anyone in our age group to do the same.
Especially at the computer, because that's where you tend to get worked up.
Well, like I say, it's the best thing. Matter of fact, you can do up to, when you're having an actual heart attack, you can do up to 8 baby aspirin, I've been told. And I advise anybody over 50 to definitely have baby aspirin in the house.
Definitely. And my question is, I use Firefox 99.9% of the time, but every now and then you guys know you have to go to IE because there's no choice. What about Internet Explorer 9? Is it safe, and is it, can it be uninstalled if you don't like it?
It's supposed to be safer. That's damning with faint praise, but it is supposed to be safer.
It's actually still a beta,
Microsoft
though, isn't
it? No, they just released it, didn't they? Microsoft is really working hard to make it safer. They know they've got a really lousy reputation out there, and they want everybody to be using all Microsoft products. So they really are working at making them better. I don't believe you can uninstall. You can back down to an earlier version of IE, but you can't uninstall IE completely off a Windows machine.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of stuck in there. Earlier versions were easily uninstallable because there was that one judge during the early trial with Microsoft.
Sorry, I didn't know he hung up.
Yeah, the Internet Explorer monopoly. You used to be able to uninstall it really easy, and then Microsoft changed that.
Right. And so we'll see. Who knows? But yeah, I think you can. Back up again, but I don't think you can ever completely uninstall it. Speaking of Microsoft, on Thursday, Microsoft urged users of older Office suites to install and run a complicated tool to protect themselves against ongoing attacks exploiting an unpatched bug in Adobe's Flash Player. For users of Office prior to 2010, the Enhanced Mitigation Experience Toolkit, the Enhanced Mitigation Experience Toolkit, or EMET, can help, said a couple of spokes robots with the Microsoft Security Response Center. Turning on EMET, or I guess EMET, for the core Office applications will enable a number of security protections called security mitigations. EMET is a tool designed for advanced users, primarily enterprise IT pros, that manually enables address space layout randomization, or ASLR if you're into that, and data execution prevention, or DEP, for specific applications. ASLR and DEP are two anti-exploit technologies included with Windows. On Tuesday, Adobe confirmed that attackers were exploiting an unpatched bug in Flash Player by sending potential victims malicious Microsoft Excel documents. According to the Microsoft spokesrobots, Excel 2010, the version included with the 2010 Office, is not susceptible to the attacks now in circulation because that edition of the spreadsheet has DEP enabled. The current attacks do not bypass DEP. Excel 2010 further protects users by isolating malicious files, inside Office 2010's protected view, which is kind of a sandbox that prevents attack code from escaping the application. But people running older versions of Excel, including the versions in Office 2007 and 2003, are not protected by DEP or protected view. Microsoft has recommended EMET before as a stopgap defense when Adobe Zero Days attacks have hit the streets. In September 2010, Microsoft told users to configure EMET to block attacks exploiting a then-unfixed flaw in Adobe Reader. So EMET 2.0 is a free download available from Microsoft's site. Steve, I believe, is putting that up right now. After downloading and installing EMET, users must manually configure the tools to add protection to Microsoft's Office applications, Excel included, and perhaps their browsers as well, and be patient and read everything because it is complex. Adobe, by the way, does plan to patch Flash Player vulnerability sometime next week. Or not. Whatever. So our question to you, are you using an old version of Excel? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. But don't do it right now because we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour, And you are continuing to listen for no really good reason to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great
member supported
Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. That music always wants me to say, I atop the Starlight Ballroom. But we're going to go back to the phones right now. We have Bodan from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi there, Bodan. What's up?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. It was an honor and a pleasure having lunch with you last Saturday.
It was a joy for us, too. Thank you for showing up.
You know, you have a woman who calls you often from, how can we say it, across the pond from the province of Ontario.
Yes.
I would have thought that she would have shown up to socialize and to partake in last Saturday's festivities.
We would have loved that.
I think
not
she was
everybody
working.
Can make it. Yeah, she was working, I believe, too.
Making the big bucks.
Yeah, Canadian dollars are actually larger than the American dollar. Yes, she does make big bucks.
I've got a question which will pursue the recycling thing that's going on. How concerned should a person be to have, let's say, drop off an old laptop that is running on Windows 98 or something like that? You drop it off thinking you're going to recycle it and you're doing the proper thing, and all of a sudden somebody gets some info off the hard drive. Should I'm considering that's what I want to do with my old laptop, should I take out the hard drive? Should I put a drill through it? But if I do that, then maybe the other parts will not be usable.
Yeah, that's a big question we get all the time at our shop, too, because people bring in stuff for sale. You should always erase your stuff from your computer before you donate it. Most of the reputable recycling companies do it for you, but you never know. There's been a lot of cases where people have bought used drives on eBay or whatnot, or pulled computers out of dumpsters that were supposedly broken and got all the data back. We've talked in the past about a program called Derek's Bootin'Nuke.
Dban.org, D-B-A-N.org.
And it's a downloadable, very very small Linux program that you boot your computer and it nukes your hard drive, completely erases
it. Program, but what about, will it do for a PC?
It does it for everything. It just happens to be a Linux program. You download it, you make a bootable CD, or I believe they now have a bootable USB, and you reboot with that.
And that strips out a lot of the memory and stuff?
And it takes care of every hard drive in your system.
Destroys all the data, completely erases all the data.
You get to choose how erased you want it, which actually translates to how long it takes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're as paranoid as I am, you always take the highest one and just let it run until it's done.
Well,
I tried a 35-way pass
and
gave up after.
What about,
I'm sorry, could you start that again?
Just taking either a hard drive out or putting a drill to the hard drive.
Well, if you take the hard drive out, that makes the computer less resaleable. If you destroy it, that's even less resaleable. But yeah, sometimes the recycling companies will strip it for parts and sell parts. You know, you get a pallet of 10 or 20 different computers, you might be able to get 5 or 10 that you can make work with all the different parts. But if you're knowledgeable enough to remove the hard drive, a lot of people do that and just keep their hard drive themselves, so there's no chance of it ever.
Sledgehammers certainly can work.
Yeah.
Or the other thing, let's say, for example, if you went to a reputable business such as Enright PC, and I said, hey, listen, open this up in front of me, give me the hard drive, and you can have the rest.
Yep, we do it all the time.
But again, unless you're going to use that hard drive, you still have the problem of properly disposing of it, or you've got a closet full of old hard drives.
Gotcha, understand.
So in the long run, you might as well use Derek's Bootin'Nuke and be done with it. But let it run at the highest level. What was it? What were you saying?
I tried a 35-way pass once and gave up after a week.
Yeah, it takes forever if you use the highest levels. But you don't care. Turn it on, set it in a corner, and leave it alone for
a
couple of
weeks.
Say
goodbye, Irene.
Yeah, usually a 2 or 3 pass is enough.
Yeah, unless the person who gets it is the NSA, you're good with a 2 or 3-way pass.
Okay. Gentlemen, always appreciate the advice I receive from you, gentlemen.
Always enjoy talking
to you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Speaking of advice, I want to mention a couple things here. One, coming up the end of this month, March 30th, the three of us are going to be at the Soho Show at the Rochester River Convention Center. And the Soho Show is a small office, home office business show where we'll be there if you got computer questions or just want to stop by and actually put a name to the face. You know, sometimes it's better because I keep saying I have a face for radio.
You do that.
And, you know, I would keep it right there. But, yeah, if you want, come on down. The show's going all day. I believe that is a Wednesday, the 30th?
When, yes.
Wednesday. We'll be there for the 10th annual Small Office Home Office Business Show at the Riverside Convention Center. The other thing that I want to make folks aware of is this Friday, of course, Monday, we start off our pledge drive. And that kicks right off at the with Jan in the morning. But this coming next Friday, we are going to have an open house. That's March 25th from 5:30 to 7. And a number of the DJs are going to be here, myself included. We will be here from 5:30 to 7. This is Greece Olympia High School at 1139 Maiden Lane. If you get a chance, come on down. You know, we are member-supported Jazz 90.1, and we depend on you folks to help us keep us going. And, you know, it'd be a great time to just come on down. Make your donation right then and there. And, you know, meet some of the other DJs that maybe you only catch here and there. And you can actually meet them and talk to them and say hello.
Well, now, and don't forget, the pledge drive starts on Monday. But if you pledge today or tomorrow online, you get a bonus gift. So just go to jazz901.org. Pledge online, and you'll not only receive the gifts that you would normally get, but you get a bonus CD on top of all, whatever gift you have at whatever level. And, of course, remember to make it to, you know, tell them in the comments that it's for sound bites. We don't want to lose that. So that would be nice. All right, our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's your question?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm looking for a program that will allow me to schedule recordings of streaming audio.
Yeah.
Programs like Soundbites, for example.
Sure. Total Recorder.
Yes. They just came out with version 8.2.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
For which operating system?
Windows 7.
Okay.
Yep.
There's another one called Radio Shift from Rogue Amoeba that does the similar thing for the Mac.
Yep.
Okay, Total Recorder it is. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you'll love that. I remember the first time I told Dave about it. He was thrilled.
Oh, I love it.
He
yes, thrilled. Like I say, I just got the email just this week. They wound up going to version 8.2, and I use it. I love it.
Terrific. Thanks for a great show, guys.
Thank you. Tell a friend.
Yep.
Tell an enemy. We don't care.
Yeah.
if you have more enemies, tell them. We don't care. But yeah, Total Recorder is a terrific program. I don't know what it costs now. Back when I bought it, it was 11 and change. And you just set it up and say, I want to, you know, record this live online stream from, oh, let's just say noon to 2 every Saturday. And it records it and turns it into a file on your hard drive, and you're done.
Mm-hmm. But some of them you could also turn around and with the Total Recorder, say some songs are a little higher quality than you need for, say, your MP3 player.
Right.
You can sit there and shrink it down in size, so you still hear the song and it still sounds great, but maybe, you know, for me, like a tin ear like mine, you know, some picking out some of these brass sections of the string, that it's like, it's so hard to pick out for me. It doesn't make any difference, so I could shrink it down, get more songs on my, you know, MP3 player.
Right.
So it works that way too. I mean, but having the latitude and cutting things down, and it was great.
Yeah, it's a nice product. Mm-hmm. I should mention that people are confused. Dave, face the camera and wave. People don't believe it's you because you're wearing a hat.
Why did they? Wait a minute. Hold the phone. All right. You know, I can't win for losing. I get criticized because, oh, the back of my head is causing such glare with the lights that they can't see you two guys.
Be proud of it. I told you what it is. I told you what it is. Yeah, it's Dave. What's interesting is the doctor is saying that he you can't get off of that, can you?
It's this image in my mind. You put it there. Dude, you did this a long time ago when
You're
I saw
welcome.
You in a dress.
Yeah, that's right. You gotta admit I look good.
Yes, you do.
See?
That's the problem.
That is the problem. I get it. For those of you who don't know, I had a previous career as a professional actor. This was on stage in a play. I just need I just need you to know that, not that I actually care. We were also talking in the IRC chat at Octothorpe Soundbites. Yes, I was a professional actor, Doctor, and in theater you wear whatever they tell you to wear. But the doc apparently just got an Android tablet, and he found a Ustream app that lets him listen to us through Ustream. So that's kind of nice, actually. Dave's not going to be able to talk for a while because he's. I've told you guys. Wait a minute.
Explain for the other maybe couple of listeners that didn't what you refer to that bald spot as.
Yeah, it's a solar panel for a sex machine. Just so you know, it's something to be proud of. I'm proud of mine.
I'll wear the hat.
Probably best if you wear the hat. The doc just got himself an Android tablet, and I have one as well. I got a Nook Color, which I absolutely love, but I have it's running right at this moment as a Honeycomb, as an Android tablet running Honeycomb. What's nice about it is I didn't root it, so I can just pull out the SD. It boots off the SD card. I just pull out the SD card, and it's back to being a Nook Color. Now it runs a little slower because it's loading everything off of the SD card and not, you know, straight from internal memory. But it's really very, very neat. It's very neat all the way around. So I'm going to have to download that Ustream app and see what I can find. Of course, I can't watch this show because A, I'm doing it, and B, we don't get wireless in here well.
I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah, so.
But the videos are stored by Ustream, so you can go back and watch the video playback on Ustream after the show. You can watch it live during the show. We have our the audio stream and the video files available on our website.
Really, if you want to, you can spend all day, every day, just watching and listening to sound bites.
14 people watching right now.
Are there? 10 of whom probably are the same 10 who are on the IRC chat. Hi, welcome everybody, and a bunch of people listening to the stream itself.
Yep,
we have over the radio. We were up to 76 folks at one point.
Nice,
listening to us.
Nice.
Yep.
So yeah, Second Life, I don't think is actually going to run on any of those tablets. It's not running on the iPad either, I don't believe.
There's a client, but it's not a full graphical client. It's basically just a chat client.
Right. That's the same thing that you can get in the Android tab, but there's no real.
Yeah.
Maybe now that the tablets are running dual core processors.
Well, and NVIDIA chipsets.
Yeah.
It's certainly a possibility both for the Android and for the iPad too.
Well, that's one thing I've been looking into is maybe for my show here when I do it Thursday nights is getting a little netbook. Mm-hmm. Just something light to carry because I have this spreadsheet that I like using. And I want something. I've got the bigger laptop with, you know, the 17-inch screen, and it's like, but toting that here every Thursday night is like, I've been thinking more and more. Because all I needed is just a quick, be able to plug the stuff in. I don't save it. I just use it as a template. Right. And I set this template up. Jan loves using it, too, for the folks to program our music so we can hit the. And just something cute like that.
Put in the name, put in the time, tells you what you're doing.
Yeah, it'll tell me total up my time and know that I'm going to be able to hit the marks and everything else. Separate spreadsheet, and it works out great. But I was thinking, more and more I thought about it, you know, it's only a couple $100. And if something happens to you, I can put it in my tote, not lugging that big laptop.
Yep.
And it would last, the battery charge should last because I'm not surfing the internet.
Right.
All I'm
right.
doing is running that spreadsheet for here.
This one lasts 4 hours.
Oh.
And that's with doing whatever I feel like doing. So,
oh, really? And that's with the...
Yeah. So if I were just doing, you know, holding up a spreadsheet, mm-hmm. showing a spreadsheet, lasts a lot longer than that.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to do is be able to... Well, that and put on a database that I can look up music. You know, just the name of that's in our library.
Long ago, back in the days when I was DJing, I had a DJing. I was on a radio station.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a little database that I created... Name of the song, time, and then whatever notes I wanted to say about the thing.
Mm-hmm.
So and genres. So if I wanted to play, it was a top 40 station.
Okay.
You know, if I wanted to play whatever, I could say I need a song that's, you know, less than 3.5 minutes
mm-hmm. yep.
for the next time. And it would bring me up a song I could play. And since it was all top 40, it wasn't like it mattered.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, you know. And I mean, the library here is unbelievable. And on Thursday nights there, I've been.
It needs to be cataloged. Is that there's got to be a?
Oh, there is. There is the whole thing. I mean, that library. Believe it or not, Derek has the database. So if I've got a client that calls up and or you know somebody calls and says, "Do you have this song?" I can quick go into the database, look it up, and it'll tell me all the artists.
Yep.
You know, Singing in the Rain. You know, and you can put that in. And it'll tell you all the various folks that do it, and if it's in the library.
Right.
So I've had one gentleman call Thursday night and wanted this one artist. Went in the library. We had a bunch of his CDs, so I had to quick go through it. Whereas if I had the database, I could quick put in the artist and the song.
Right.
And do it. But oh, well.
Right. Well, that's easy enough to do. It's just a matter of taking the time to do it. That's where the problem lies. Always with these things. All right, we're going to take a slightly longer break now. You have wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. Don't you people have anything real to do? In case you don't, if you're like us, you have another hour to waste. Come on back, because we've got another hour of our own to waste. We'll be back on the other side of these announcements with a whole another hour of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. We continue to be the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites right here on the truly great, member-supported, we can't stress that enough, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we have a special guest in the studio with us.
My name is Justin Arce. I'm from Rochester, New York, and it's a great opportunity to be here with the crew. Mr. Rob Linton, he's my teacher at the WAMOCO program, teaching digital communications, and it's just a great opportunity to be here again.
Cool.
Terrific. Well,
glad to have you here, young man. And it's amazing. Rob turning out some good kids here.
Yeah, clearly he is.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's turning them out.
Yeah, I know. How is he doing that, Justin?
He's Rob, but still, it's good to know.
Yeah, it's good. Glad to have you here, sir. And like I say, you know, we'll show you a little more later on what's going on here at this great studio.
Yeah.
But let's...
Yeah, on the news. Security firm Sophos is warning that a new scam is spreading virally on Twitter and that a significant number of people have already fallen for it. The online timer scam claims to measure how long users have spent on the Twitter website. It spreads via seemingly innocuous Twitter messages along the lines of, I have spent 30 days, 14 hours on Twitter. How much have you? Find out here. Followed by a shortened link to a malicious website. Anyone who clicks on the link is directed to a website that requests to connect to the user's Twitter account in order to measure their usage. The first thing it actually does, however, is post the same message in the user's feed, this time with a different and seemingly random time measurement, but with the same link. Oblivious to this happening, the user is rewarded with a pop-up window that claims to show how many views the user's account has had. Again, the number appears to be random. By way of the main payload, a pop-up window then appears offering an IQ test, which it claims the user must complete to defeat spam and verify you are not a bot. Upon completion of the survey, users are requested to enter their cell phone number to receive further questions, although
Get
the small
out.
Print says users will be sent 4 text messages a week at a cost of $2 each. It's a clever scam
Ouch.
That tiptoes effectively through the minefield of credulity. It's not hard to see why people would fall for it. In many ways, it's surprising it's taken so long for Twitter to be targeted like this. Because of the requirement to stick to 140 characters in each message, most people use URL shortening services. This leaves those clicking the link with absolutely no idea where they're going to end up, and most of us have learned to have one eye on the status bar whenever we hover over a link. Twitter is trying to combat this with its T.co service, which claims to be safer. This checks URLs against a list of known malicious sites, and the full URL appears in tweeted messages. However, TCO is clumsy and confusing to use. Thus, many people stick with the rival services Bitly, B-I-T.L-Y, and Google, G-O-O.G-L, which is, of course, offered by Google. Additionally, Twitter relies on users to verify the authenticity of sites that want to connect to a user's account. As it is becoming clear, users simply aren't scrupulous enough. Many simply don't care. On both Facebook and Twitter, users are encouraged to allow connections from trivial sites and applications as part of the day-to-day use. In short, users are a little too loose with what they link up with, but that helps the wheels of Twitter and Facebook keep rolling. So our question to you, do you worry about those short links you're always clicking on? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. I don't know, I've never been one of those people who has to count the number of connections I have on Twitter or Facebook.
Be honest with you, I still don't get Twitter. I don't care that you're walking around your house or you're going off to do grocery shopping or what the H you're doing in your life.
Yeah, right? There are some things that I use it for that are actually very useful. There's some news feeds that I follow and things like that.
Well, that I could, but these folks that just sit there.
Well, you don't have to follow them if you don't want to. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Linden is in the house.
And we don't even have rum balls.
It's unbelievable.
As we walk and breathe.
Would you like to say a little something on the air?
A little something on the air.
He thinks he's witty. He's half right.
A lot of hot air.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem is for the novice user, they don't realize the dangers. Oh, cool. How many hours have I spent?
And then just click the link.
I just wanted to come up and make sure you weren't giving my kid a hard time.
He's been terrific. He's been polite. He's been friendly. I clearly did not get that from you.
I heard him make his radio debut, which is really cool. He did a nice job.
He did a nice job. Yeah.
You're hired. You want
okay,
a job? You're hired.
So long.
Yeah. The check's in the mail. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've heard that before, too.
Okay. Well, I just thought I'd stop in and say hello. It's been a while since I've seen you boys.
Well, it's been bleak for
all
us
of 7 days.
All of 7 days. Yeah, exactly.
All right. I'm sorry.
I don't think anybody saw much of anything last week.
Yeah, wait a minute. Bring it down to earth here. So when are we doing that again? That was a huge success.
That was awesome. I don't ever want to see a pancake again.
Yeah.
Summer hot dogs.
Yeah, summer hot dogs.
Oh, that'd be cool.
An outdoor cookout.
Yes.
You cooking?
Yeah, I will.
Oh, hell yeah.
I will. You know I'm good for it.
700 pancakes in less than 3 hours.
Well, how about saying that on the air so people can actually hear it?
Yeah,
don't
but I mean.
Give me that eye.
Let's see. We made it through 900 pancakes in an hour.
Well, 900 pancakes by. I had the crew starting to make pancakes by a little after 10 o'clock because we were running out. I was bringing out the last tray, so I got the Kiwanis group. Thank God for all those guys that came in there. And the rest of the volunteers, they just jumped right in there, got the grills going, and started flipping pancakes like crazy.
Well, I'll tell you, you know what was great is we had a lot of volunteers there. We had volunteers from the Irondequoit Kiwanis Club. We had Sam's Club there. We had, of course, radio station staff. We had the folks from the cooking school at Tops there. And it was really, really cool. And
even Sam from my office came.
Yep. I was told at the beginning of the event, Rob, you will stay out of the kitchen.
Yep.
And I said, okie dokie. Laurelan's brother.
Could we have been, if I'd known it was that easy, could we just have said, Rob, you have to stay out of the cafeteria.
Well, here's what Laurelan said. She's like, Rob, stay home.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's what she literally said a day before as I was panicking about. She's like, Rob, stay home.
Yep.
Stay home, Rob.
She did. Know? She honestly did. As her and I were going around getting stuff.
Yeah.
But literally, yeah,
you
I kicked him out of the
competent people around you. That's all I have.
I have
to
very
say.
Competent people around me. And actually, we're planning on it again for next year.
Super.
Coming up next is going to be Art Loves Jazz. We've got information on that on our website. That's, I'm trying to think how many years we've been doing that. Four or five years we've been doing that over at Artisan Works. And the event is really cool. If folks have never been to Artisan Works before, have you?
I love Artisan Works.
You got to check it out. You got to check it out. It's a great fundraiser for the station. You go, you eat a lot, you see some great art. There's a live art auction. We have silent auction. We got two jazz bands that are going to be playing there as well.
Yeah, go to silent auction.
Yeah, but
don't twitch at the wrong time.
But the other thing that I've been pushing is for this week is to get our listeners to come on down this coming Friday to open house from 5:30 to 7 o'clock. Come on down and say hello.
Unfortunately, this week, Laurelan will have her way. I'm not able to be at the open house. I'll be DJing down at RIT this coming Friday night.
Very exciting.
So all the staff is very relieved that I will not be able to be here for the open house. But we do hope that people will be able to come down.
Party.
That's right. Even when the boss is around, the mice will play, so we don't
really care. Heck yeah. But no, that was the best thing. I kicked him out of the kitchen.
Sure.
If
you had been there last week, you would have seen Rob wandering around with this look on his face like something's about to go wrong. I know it.
Yeah.
Nothing did.
No.
You're not good at it's all going well. You're really good at it's about to go bad.
Well, like I say, I've had, you know, a couple years experience doing these pancake breakfasts right. from the Kiwanis. So, but to have the pancakes, 900 of them already made,
yep.
the brown and serve sausages, so I just got a rhythm going. And right from 8 o'clock right on through until after 10:30, we had a smooth rhythm going, and it was going great
the
with him out of the kitchen.
Tasty, the food was great, the...
We have to thank a member, by the way. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We have somebody who just made a pledge during your show here. Absolutely. It's a beautiful thing. We want to thank Joe from Fairport for pledging his financial support online. And we want to remind folks, I heard you talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
That if people pledge their support early, between now and 6 a.m. on Monday morning, we're going to throw in a free gift for them, which is a really cool deal.
Yeah, really.
What we do is we have Linda Wildman. We spin around 10 times.
Wow.
And then have her reach into the prize closet.
Nice.
We had a little issue for a while where she was grabbing, you know, office supplies.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So now she's at least getting the CDs. Exactly. So anybody that received post-it notes, we apologize. Yeah. But anyway, so yeah, I heard you plugging that, but I wanted to be sure we thanked our member as well.
You were listening?
I got to figure out what I'm going to yell at you about on Monday.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, so thank you so much. I won't go into the whole spiel here. We'll save that for next week. But you know we're member-supported, and we can't tell you how much we really appreciate all of our members who we know reach deep and help us out.
Some great CDs that they're giving away, too. Matter of fact, folks are into Jeff Beck. He just came out with a new CD.
Yeah,
it's a compilation, and it's got some other great artists on it. It's Jeff Beck, Rockin' and a Partying. It's a real good CD. I was playing it Thursday night, and some good stuff on it. I was really surprised.
So now one of the people on the IRC chat is asking a question. Who got the more people coming, the polka dots or us?
Polka.
Yeah, clearly it would be polka. We knew that. We knew it would be polka.
Well, the thing with the polka guys is Al Malutis and Ray Serafin were just walking around the breakfast with a smirk on their face the entire time.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
As if to say, we won, you didn't, ha ha.
You could sort of see the age skew.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, the polka people are just about the coolest. You know, I mean, listeners really are, but these people are great. They came out. I mean, a lot of them came from nursing homes and things of that nature, and they wanted to come in. They wanted to meet Ray and Al. They wanted their pancakes, and darned if you were going to move them before the polka show was over. You know what I'm saying?
And they were great. They were great. It was a really nice day. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Denise from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Denise. What's your question?
Denise, man.
I'm sorry, Dennis. I'm sorry.
What is it?
This is Dennis.
Dennis.
Hiya, Dennis.
I'm sorry.
This is an E. Tell me that's not
yeah,
an E.
Yeah, no,
it's Denise from Henry.
Yeah, I got the Henrietta part. I did not.
I tried to use abbreviations.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dennis.
Because nobody can spell Henrietta.
How do you add an extra E and call it an abbreviation?
On Henrietta.
No, I'm talking about the Denise.
No!
For Pete's sake. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I was trying to write quick around Rob.
What?
Jeez, what Louise. You're worse than my ex-wife.
was fighting words, buddy boy.
Darn right.
What's up, Dennis?
So I've got an iPad with 3G service, and I want to know, unlike the iPhone, I can't make phone calls with it, but I wonder if there might be third-party tools or apps that I could use, something like Skype maybe, or some other product that would let me dial out through a headset with a microphone and talk to somebody on the phone.
Yeah, you can use Skype. They have a... I forget whether it's Skype in or I think Skype out service, where from your computing device, we can't say computer anymore,
right?
From your computing device, you can call a regular landline. Skype to Skype calls are free, but Skype to telephone calls you'd pay for. There's also a program called Line 2 that's been very popular on the iPhone for giving you a second telephone line, basically allowing you to call a telephone from your computing device, from your iPhone or iPad. There's also some question whether Google Talk can do that, but it's generally set up so that it calls your cell phone and then places the call
Google
through your
Voice. You mean
Google Voice? Yeah. And then, of course, FaceTime will let you call other FaceTime users and other Macs as well. But both Skype and Line 2 will let you call an actual telephone. There's also, I don't know if rumors is the right word, that the Magic Jack people who make the little hardware device, Magic Jack, for doing voice over IP, they're working on a software-only solution called Magic Talk. And that should also work when that gets released as well.
Great, guys. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, Dennis.
Sure. Yeah, it's a lot of people use voice over IP services like Skype or Magic Jack, especially if you know people in other cities and even other countries, because it's a lot cheaper than the telephone service. I've read that Magic Jack is getting sued by several towns around the nation because they don't pay 911 surcharges. Because they're not a phone company.
Right.
So if you look at your telephone bill, you're paying like $9 or $10 a month for the 911 surcharge. And Magic Jack is saying, oh, no, we charge $20 a year. There's no way we're going to collect $10 a month to pay for that. And we don't have to because we're not a telephone service. We're a data service.
Right.
That's been the fight for years with the phone companies wanting to get the internet companies re-regulated so they have to pay the same taxes. Now most of the phone companies are internet companies.
Yeah, right. We'll see where that goes. All right, our next caller is Chris from Gates, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
Yeah, the saga continues. I have a new laptop, so I'm finally got all my music over, and I'm going to restore my Shuffle, my iTouch, and my iPad. So I started with the Shuffle, only to find out my podcast will go over fine, but now when I try to do the music, it says that the song, whatever, could not be used because the original file could not be found. Would you like to locate it? So what I've seen is when I locate it, it says, okay, it found one of 3,000 songs or something. Is there a quick way for me to indicate all the songs, or do I have to go one by one finding them in another file and bringing them in?
I think, I'm trying to remember, and I'm looking for it here, I think if it finds one and there are other songs in that same folder, it will also find them.
Okay. It didn't. They're all in this one library over there. It found the one, but I still have the sign in front of the check mark that says, no, they haven't located it.
There are some additional tools, I'm Googling around for trying to remember the name of it now, that will clean up your library looking for missed files.
I mean, they're there, they're just not connecting with, for some reason, where my music is. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, it sounds like the music folder didn't get copied correctly, and so the library file
is
different.
Well, if you just grab that folder and drag it into iTunes,
that's what I did.
Right, so
that's what I did originally, but it's not recognizing where they are.
Well, you want to drag the highest level folder, like all your music is in one folder, drag that top folder in.
Okay.
You may end up with duplicates that way. So what some people do in this case is remove all of the music from iTunes itself and then re-drag the folder into iTunes.
Right.
And then it will re-add those lines.
All right, I'll try that because I wanted to start small with the Shuffle. And then work on up with all the other stuff going on. But then I notice, my songs, they can't locate it. So,
right.
Playlist back. At one time, I didn't have my playlist, but my playlists are there. But then again, it doesn't recognize.
Well,
see,
your playlists are based on the folder path, the directory path. So if they're in a different place than they were on the old machine, then it won't find them. So you may, in fact, have to redo your playlists, which
I did get them. They are there. They played around with it and found them, and at least I have them, and that's why I said, okay, well, now I'll finally start to restore because at least I had the playlist. When I click on the playlist, the songs say they're there, but, of course, I can't drag them over because they're all missing from the original site. So.
Well, but that's my point, which is that the playlists are based on the path to the song.
Right.
So if on the old machine you had one path and on the new machine you have a different path, the playlist won't work no matter what you drag where. So you have to make sure either the path is the same or recreate your playlists.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it's going to end up being.
Yeah, one of the tricks that Apple has in their instructions for moving an iTunes folder is to consolidate your iTunes library on the old computer, and then you can copy that whole iTunes folder to a new computer, and it will work. It sounds like you just copied a piece of the folder and didn't get the library files.
Well, I think I had it all because I had it on the external. I had everything on an external, and everything from the external was copied.
Well, but
over.
You still lost the paths. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We have Justin in the studio as well as Rob Linton.
You haven't said that in a long time. Who's that again?
Rob Linton.
Blew that meter.
You'll never get away from it now.
No.
You just never will.
You know what I was thinking about the other day? Do you remember back when we first as long as you don't respond to the voices in your head. No, I'm just kidding. Remember when we started at the old place?
Mm-hmm.
You used to call me the reticent producer.
Yes.
You remember that?
I do, because you wouldn't get on the
I was intimidated.
You were very intimidated. Shy. You were young.
I was very young.
Shy.
And then the people took my picture and put it on all those movie posters.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh,
wait,
that's
a minute.
It.
Nobody took. They found your picture on the web where you had left it in that state that you were in when that picture was taken.
That's when I learned just the power of the internet.
Yes,
you know what I'm
exactly
saying?
Right. And you know those pictures will never die.
They won't.
You know, 100 years from now, somebody will find them.
I'm just hoping that my kids never find those posters.
See, I used to tell my godson this, and I would never talk to my daughter about these things. I used to tell my daughter the same thing. I said, when I was your age, there were no cell phones, there was no internet. The few people who know the stupid, dangerous, illegal things I did were doing them with me, and they're not going to talk about it.
Well, you know, and one of the things that I actually teach in both of my classes now, which doesn't directly have anything to do with broadcasting or media or anything like that, is just how powerful the internet is. You know, the fact that these kids who take pictures of themselves half-clothed and wonder how they end up around to every cell phone in the building or on the internet or Facebook, they don't get it.
Yep.
You know, there's school districts now that don't allow kids to, you know, shower like back in the day, if you know what I'm saying,
in locker rooms.
Because of that. You have to worry about that.
The worst thing you had to worry about then was a wet towel.
Exactly. And now you got to worry about cameras, little teeny tiny cameras.
Yep.
And, you know, kids do not understand the power of the web, you know, and it's unfortunately until you're on the receiving end of something bad happening.
Yep. I only said it to my friend who sent it to their friend, to their friend, to their friend, to their friend.
Well, and with the ability now of literally like with my BlackBerry, I could take a picture and upload it instantly to Facebook. You know, and that's the thing. Technology is a blessing and a curse in that way. So that's what I try to tell both of them. I did that with my Greece class last week of like, here's what could happen. And you try to scare them with some horror stories and stuff like that.
Yep.
And actually, the most alarming thing was I asked the question, how many of you have ever known somebody to have one of those viral texts go around about somebody else? They all raised their hand.
Yep.
All of them. So, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's very tough. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Charlie from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Charlie. What's your question?
Hello, Nick.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine. Well, I just wanted to point out something. Internet Explorer 9, right?
Right.
It's not compatible with the CA software. So I had to uninstall Internet Explorer 9 and put Internet Explorer 8 back in. So, I mean, maybe you can tell the other people they have the CA software not to get IE9.
Excellent. Thank you, Charlie.
It won't run with it. And they told me to call the Microsoft and tell them that. They don't even know that.
Yeah, probably not.
Now, IE9's only been in beta for, what, a year?
Yeah, right.
So well, CA should have been working on it all along.
CA, of course, Computer Associates, they are the folks who make...
The place where software goes to die?
One of the suites that you can get for free from your internet service provider. So it's good to know whether or not it works with that. And you would think that that's one of the bigger – since it's one of the bigger suites out there, that Microsoft would have tested it with that. But Apparently not. Thanks, Charlie.
All right. Have a nice day.
You too. Appreciate it. Sometimes despair. I get it.
I'm finding blog postings at CA going back to October of 2008 saying that the beta of IE9 doesn't work with CA.
And apparently Microsoft simply doesn't care.
Well, CA doesn't look at their own blog postings.
Well, CA may know it. It's Microsoft, he said, who doesn't care. And why would they care? They have their own antivirus. It works with theirs. The heck with everybody else. And ours instead.
A little bit of it, yeah. If CA's program doesn't work with it, then it's on CA's head to fix it.
Well, you would certainly think so. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I do get that, you know, there's a billion combinations of computers nowadays. You can't test all of them, but really something as big as Computer Associates antivirus protection? I mean, come on.
Yeah. No, you're right there.
You would think they would have something going.
Well, there's the key word. You would think.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Common sense, least common element in the known universe.
Or like they say, the first three letters of assume you might become.
Exactly. Speaking of which, the wild popularity of Facebook and other social media sites has spawned a cottage industry of con artists. Promising average investors a chance to cash in on the frenzy through shares in the companies ahead of their initial public offerings. While the pre-IPO offerings may be real, investors must be aware that the people touting them may be frauds. That's according to the U.S. Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, or FINRA. Investors need to understand that it's extremely rare and extremely unlikely that the average Main Street investor will have access to these kinds of shares in social media companies before these companies go public, if they ever go public, said Jerry Walsh, FINRA's vice president for investor education. A simple search of the internet reveals YouTube videos telling investors how they can get in on the ground floor of exciting investment opportunities in social media companies, as well as blogs that are devoted to thinly traded, unregistered securities. The touts aim to connect investment ideas to the buzz surrounding the concept of social media to lure unsuspecting investors in, said Walsh, whose agency is looking into potentially fraudulent schemes attached to social media. With any startup company, early-stage investors that are putting their capital and their belief and trust into the company are exposing themselves to a great deal of loss, said Walsh. The workers who often get stock options should the company ever go public are putting in their sweat equity. So why would a stranger approach you, give you an opportunity to get in on this ground floor investment? Who are you? You need to ask why me. She said con artists commonly manage to persuade investors to take part in their scams by dangling phantom riches, the promise of huge guaranteed returns for getting in on the ground floor. FINRA recommends a few things investors can do to avoid cons. Verify that the person touting the investment is licensed. Look the person up on the Federal Bureau of Prisons Inmate Locator. In other news, there is a Federal Bureau of Prisons Inmate Locator. Google them and get a second opinion from a licensed investment professional or an attorney. So our question to you, have you seen one of these scams? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, 966-5299, and a toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Steve is frantically looking at the Federal Bureau of Prisons Inmate Locator, hoping not to find himself.
No, actually, I was going back and forth on Twitter. There's an interesting, apparently there's a full moon coming that's going to...
Tonight
that's going to look...
Supermoon.
The supermoon, yeah.
Well, the supermoon was last night.
Supermoon was last night. So we all seem to still be here, so I'm pretty sure it was not as big a deal as you might think.
Mm-hmm. Professor Brian Cox from England, who does a lot of TV shows on astronomy, is having a back...
Not the same Brian Cox who was in The Bourne Legacy, but a different Brian Cox.
Brian Cox. He's having a back and forth with Phil Plait, the bad astronomer,
right?
About the supermoon and apparent angular sizes and there's links into NASA about why the moon looks so big and different optical illusions. So it's kind of interesting to go back and forth between famous people, I guess. So Twitter doesn't have to be what you're having for lunch all the time.
Right, right. Sometimes it's pretty good. Well, it's at perigee right now, right? That's part of what makes the...
Yeah, it's the point closest to us. And the relative size of other objects in the distance will change the way the size it looks to you.
Isn't that supposed to be this big again until, what, 2400?
Yes, I plan to be around to see it.
You do? Let me know.
That's why the moon always looks so much bigger when it's just coming up or just going down, because it's now behind buildings and stuff, and it just looks bigger, and it looks smaller when it's up.
Not bad drugs.
And technically, the moon without anything else in the way, the moon would be smaller when it's closer to the horizon because it's slightly farther away from you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's slightly, you know, when you're talking about thousands and thousands of miles, it really doesn't make much sense.
Yeah.
All right, our next caller is Gil from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gil. What's your question?
I got a question. A friend of mine just recently told me that he got an email from with my address. It wasn't me. I've got XP. I've got AOL as my internet provider through Roadrunner. How could that be?
Well, first, you're using AOL.
Yep.
I don't mean to be rude, but AOL is riddled with this sort of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also very possible that it had absolutely nothing to do with you. What likely has happened, because we see this more and more often now, some third person who is friends with both of you is infected with a virus. The virus is sending out things randomly. It picked your name. So it's sending out things using your name to all the other people in that third person's address book. And, of course, some of them will be mutual friends of both of you.
Mm-hmm. We see it a lot.
So what you need to do, really, is get every single one of your friends to clean out their machines.
So it's nothing you're doing. It's somebody
it's
you
know. It's
coming
from somebody else.
And, okay. And it just happened to
because
pick you.
I got AVG. I run a scan once a week, and I do a percent sign temp to clean out all the cookies.
Yeah, but the other thing, though, is you just can't do just viruses. You also have to run a spyware and malware program.
Yeah,
because,
I got a spyware.
Okay, good.
I got it on,
Then you're doing good.
But your friends are clearly not, so have them dance the security tango, and that should help.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that. I mean,
yeah, it's very easy for you to mimic the sender of a message. In fact, you can go into your own email program and change the name it's sending to.
Right.
Or sending from, sorry. So, you know, now and then I'll set mine to, you know, President Obama and send a message to someone who falls for it.
Yeah.
No, I had another one come in this week again, you know, and it's a story that, you know, I've told a number of times, but it just doesn't seem to get old in that. These folks are, you know, again, using their computers for their business and then let their kids play on it.
That's
downloading
simply
music.
Not bright. Excuse me, but it's simply not bright.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the only computer we have in the house. And it's like,
least give them their own username. Computers are expensive, and if you only have one computer in the house, give the kids their own username and make them a standard user. Don't let them be an administrator.
Or tell them to stay off of downloading music with BearShare. I've taken this one program off 3 times for this individual. And if the kids are going to persist in putting it back on there, well, they keep doing it. Well, then you don't let them use this PC. It's your computer, your rules. Last I knew, the adults are supposed to be in charge.
Right. Change your password. Add them as regular users, not administrators.
Yep.
Make sure your new password is something fairly strong and not obvious, like the name of your dog or whatever. And then go from there and let them have their own place on the system. It'll at least save you from some of that stuff.
Yes.
But the reality is that a significant number of the songs on file sharing networks are fake. They are specifically viruses. Trojan horses, really, mm-hmm. I guess is the way mm-hmm. to put that.
Yep.
That will take over your machine. Ask your kids how many times they've downloaded a song, tried to play it, and it didn't play. And they just thought to themselves, the download didn't work. I'll try again with another one.
Yeah, I mean, she came into the shop in tears. She goes, I don't know what, you know, and it's like, yeah, I feel for her, but, you know, I mean, worst enemy when you continue to let them use your machine.
And I know that everybody wants to be a friend to their kids and a pal to their kids. Kids have like 1,000 friends.
Mm-hmm.
They only have a couple of parents.
Amen to that one.
And so be the parent. It's way more important for you to be the parent than to be the friend. Sometimes you can be their friend, but be the parent when it's important to be the parent. And that has a lot more to do with protecting them than with being their buddies.
Yeah, in the long run, it's, you know, you're doing them a big favor, you know, by protecting them, because who knows what else is, you know, information is being stolen because they sit there and get on there and steal
particularly if it's the machine you use to carry out your business. You'll have your own your own business software on there. You'll have your own business data, like, oh, I don't know, your checking account number and your savings account number and all the other numbers that are part of ruling your life.
And if you're letting them get out there and get, you know, steal it, oops.
That's exactly right.
Because, you know, you're letting them in there, and if they're not, you know, paying attention to what the heck they're doing, they're giving out other information, and, oh, it could be stealing your information, too.
Yeah. No, just, you got to be, particularly if it's your business.
If you care about you,
you don't care about your business, then so what? But if you do, in fact, care about your business, you want to be a little more careful. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with each and every one of you. It is 39 minutes after this second hour of Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. So here's the question on everybody's mind, I suppose. The Apple iPad 2 may be another victim of the Japanese earthquake, warns a technology research firm. Now, this article is really about the iPad 2, but it should be about every single computing device on Earth. The reason: the tablet uses a range of components from Japanese vendors who face supply, manufacturing, and shipping challenges in the quake's aftermath. Before I go any farther, I do want to say that we all feel terrible.
Yes.
For our brothers and sisters in Japan who are dealing with this tragedy, I don't mean to belittle that by reading this email, but this thing. Those possible disruptions come as Apple is trying to maintain or even increase iPad 2 supplies to face continued very strong consumer demand in the U.S. The analysis by IHSI Supply, based in part on its disassembly of the iPad 2, identifies the tablet's electronic compass, battery, memory chips, and possibly the specialized glass in the display as all coming from Japan, and those could be in short supply in short order. Five parts from Japanese vendors were discovered. NAND flash by Toshiba, dynamic RAM access memory by Elpida Memory, the electronic compass by AKM Semiconductor, the touchscreen's glass overlay sheet, which iSupply says is likely by Asahi Glass, which I probably am pronouncing badly and I apologize, and the tablet's battery by Apple Japan. While some of these suppliers reported that their facilities were undamaged, delivery of components from all of these companies is likely to be impacted by at least to some degree by logistical issues now plaguing most Japanese industries in the quake zone. The impact could result from possible difficulties in getting raw materials to manufacture the iPad components and from shipping the finished products out. Another possible problem is employee absences due to transportation system problems. The various challenges are being compounded by interruptions in the electricity supply, which can have a major impact on delicate processes such as semiconductor lithography. Finally, the continued aftershocks are disrupting chip maker facilities. Earthquakes ranging from 4 to 7 on the Richter scale will make it impossible to really restart these fabs until the earthquakes stop happening with such frequency. Every time a quake tops 5, the equipment automatically shuts down. Even if the Japanese suppliers do run into ongoing problems, it's hard to evaluate how great the impact might be on iPad 2 supplies or how long it might last. That's because companies like Apple routinely have backup suppliers who can step in quickly to make up for shortages or supply chain disruptions. The lithium-ion polymer battery in the iPad 2 is also manufactured in Japan, despite the fact that the whole battery pack is labeled as assembled in China, according to iSupply, which says the extra-thin lithium-ion polymer battery itself is built by Apple Japan, which operates as a subsidiary of Apple. Are you still waiting for your iPad 2? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, a friend of mine was showing me the iPad 2. It's, you know, now, Steve, what is it? Mainly, the camera, the dual-core processor.
Yeah, it's a dual-core processor, so the processing is twice as fast. The graphics are 9 times faster, which the gaming companies are going to love. And then you got the front and back cameras.
Although, my favorite review of the iPad 2 said the only way the front and back cameras could be cheaper is if you had to put film in them.
Yeah.
which I found. The front I was very amused by that, frankly.
The front camera, the Apple hasn't released any official specs yet, and the teardown companies are trying to find specs from manufacturers, but the front camera is a VGA camera because it's designed for FaceTime. So what's that, 640 by 480 probably, which is, 0.6 megapixels?
Right.
And the rear camera is HD. So it'll shoot a 720 video. So it's probably, what is that, 1280 by 720?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1280 by 720.
Yeah, the lower res of the HD cameras. The camera in the iPhone is a 5-megapixel camera. So it has a much, much better camera than the iPad does. But the iPhone is also an $800 device without subsidy. So that's Apple's design goal was to keep that magic $500 price point. So they have to... have to do something with it to keep the prices down. Now, iPad 3 will probably have a much better camera in it. So if you want to wait, if you wait another year, but then in another year there'll be iPad 4. So it's a neat camera. The FaceTime camera is fun for doing video phone calls with friends and family. Long distance. Here's the grandchildren. And then you've got the HD camera just for shooting quick HD. In fact, there was I read a report from a guy who did a CNN upload of a explosion at a gas factory, I think it was, and he took the video on his iPhone, USB connected it to his iPad, edited it in iMovie, and uploaded it to CNN in about 3 minutes, with a commentary track and text titling on it, being able to edit it in iMovie.
What took him so long?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He said before the iPad, it would have just been the raw video upload. But now, you take another minute and you can edit it and put your titles and tracks on it and everything.
There you go.
All right. Our next caller is Tom from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Hi. I've taken your advice on
that's a bad idea.
Working as a user as opposed to the administrator.
Good.
Now, when I try to... print something, whether it's in Word or spreadsheet or whatever, and I hit print, and it goes to a screen which wants me to save it as an XPS document, and I can't print.
File association.
What version of Windows are you using?
I have Windows XP.
And when you choose print, you're selecting the right printer?
Yeah, it'll print. The print will work if I'm working as the administrator, okay? But if working as a user and I try to print something, I'll do it right now.
It's properties of the printer.
It's the same thing we talked about earlier. It's the permissions for the printer. If you right click on the printer itself as administrator,
okay,
and go into properties, then you can set it to be used by everybody, wide open.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So log on as an administrator, then you said right click?
Right click and select properties from the drop down.
On the printer. Right click on what?
On the printer itself. So go into the printer section of
control panel.
Control panel, thank you. Go into the printer section of the
control panel. Okay.
Right. And you'll see the printer there. Right click on it, select properties.
Okay, and then there's an option there to make it available for
everybody. Yeah, set the permissions to read and write for everybody.
Okay, all right. I do appreciate your help.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a feature for controlling who has access to printers. So if the group of writers gets access to the black and white cheap printer, and the graphic artists get the expensive color printer. But when it's your own printer, you want everyone to be able to print to it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Actually, you may want to have your kids not print to the expensive color printer.
I actually have an old computer set up as a print server specifically so that my daughter could print on the cheap little, back in the day, on the cheap little,
You had the old Loki.
Inkjet. Yeah, I got her an inkjet printer. And she could print on that, and I made sure I bought four separate colors for that. So when she was in her blue period, I didn't have to throw away full red.
Remember? Yes. Yeah. She'd sit there and do something with full blue background.
She'd print a whole blue thing and print the whole thing out, and then okay, fine, honey, that's not a problem because we bought them one at a time. You buy the cartridges you need.
That was better.
So that was useful. And then when she outgrew that and she started to print papers, then I would tell her, you know, you have to be careful what you print. And she was always very good about it. She printed her papers on the one and whatever little pictures. She eventually outgrew the there was a site where you could, like paper dolls, putting dresses up.
Yep.
But they were on screen and they were fairies. And you could change the wing color and the hair color and the
dresses.
And
then cut them out.
And so she would print them out. Yeah. So she used to do that, God, by the thousands. I can't tell you how much paper and how much ink I went through. And I didn't care. It was my daughter. I didn't care.
Yeah.
But the point is, she had that printer essentially all to herself. I don't think either my wife or I ever actually used it.
Well, that's where a lot of folks get, you know, they've really got to weigh it out. And as a matter of fact, I just had a customer in that was saying, gee, you know, they put these printers out there. They're so darn cheap. You're thinking you're getting a great deal. You get one of these all-in-ones for about nothing. And then all of a sudden the inks in that run out and you got to go buy it. I says, yeah, that's what they're doing.
I know people.
They don't make their money on the machine. It's the commodities.
Yeah, I know people that don't buy new ink for their printer. They just go buy a new printer.
It's cheaper in the long run.
Yeah.
Printer ink costs way more than gasoline.
Yeah. We do that with a lot of our customers. We sell them an inexpensive black and white laser printer for 90% of their printing, and then a color inkjet printer if you want to do photos. Or, you know, you go to Walmart or Kmart or one of the other stores, or even right in your computer. Most of the photo management programs, you can send it to online photo printing shops, and 20, 30 cents a print you can get. Color prints in the mail, so you may not need a color printer in yourself. Because the annoying thing with the liquid ink printers is if you use them too much, you run out of ink and they're expensive.
Right.
If you don't use them enough, they dries up and they're expensive. And
right.
So,
well, that's I'll tell you what. Except for printing out the news for here, I can't tell you the last time I printed something at home. And at work, My boss prefers things on paper, so I print out stuff for him. But again, other than that, I can't tell you the last time I printed anything. I PDF everything, send everybody PDFs.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's where I, you know, tell folks when you're thinking of printers, you know, opposing, like Steve was saying, also look at a laser printer. If a lot of the stuff that you do is black and white, probably per sheet cost, it's better to go with a laser than it is the ink, because the ink, they really get you big time.
And even color lasers are dropping significantly in price. You get a color laser for under $300 now. I remember, in fact, it's where I met Jackie, my current boss. We joked that she used to work for me because she was the sales rep when I was buying stuff for my company. We used to hang out at her store because they got one of the new color laser printers, and it was only $50,000.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Only $50,000.
Wait, are you telling me we're done?
Yep.
Holy mother of pearl, doesn't time fly when you're doing radio?
When you're having fun.
That's it. We're done for a whole nother week. I want to thank each and every one of you called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get. Apparently the end of the hour snuck up on us. Call next week, call Chicago style. Call early, call often. We're going to, you know what? I think we'll take the entire whole rest of this week off, and we won't be back until next Saturday.
Or this Friday. Come and visit us this Friday from 5:30 to 7 here at Greece Olympia High School. We're having our open house and meet a few of the DJs.
Right. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks so much for listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1. George is up next with some of the best German music you will ever hear, so don't go away.